welcome to a stirring edition of Fourth and One. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs, and I really wish you could have heard the intro I had planned for this week, but Nick's editing the podcast, so he's not going to allow it to air, probably.
Yeah, that's never happening.
But it was great. Tell the people how great it was.
It was not.
Okay, from the standpoint of the cringe on your face when it was epic. It was probably the best open I've ever done.
I love how you keep teasing something that nobody's ever going to hear.
No, it's disappointing. But
you try to do that every week with them, and I'm sure they get irritated with you. And I hope they put negative reviews with one star
about you. Well, you know what? I am disappointed that your family has been so aggressive in rating me on those iTunes ratings. But, you know.
Yes, my grandma is furious with you.
If I could ever teach my mom how to do iTunes, I would get a 5-star one that talks about how much she likes me on there.
I'm pretty sure your mom's got an iPad. I think you told me she's got an iPad.
I don't think it's more of just a tablet.
Excuse me.
We're from Raytown. We don't have fancy things with eyes in front of them.
All right.
No, she does. She does have a tablet.
So I heard there's a Chiefs.
And let's be honest. She wouldn't give me more than a 4-star rating anyway. She knows me too well. So hey, some news this week. I don't know if you're aware. There's a Chiefs wide receiver who's been suspended since late April during the draft. I met with NFL investigators today, or not today. I guess this week. To discuss what we presume is, or what's been reported, they talked about the circumstances that led to the police investigation, ultimately led to the DCF investigation. Of course, we're talking about Tyreek Hill. What do you think, Nick, is the significance of the fact that, because of course Roger Goodell had said until the criminal investigation is done, we're not addressing this. What do you think is the significance of the fact that that meeting has taken place in terms of what that means for Tyreek Hill's availability, not only for the season, but for training camp?
Well, I think with the NFL moving forward on their aspect of it, of getting the answers and doing the fact-finding mission that they are, I would not be surprised if there was a decision about his potential suspension. And what they decide to do with that. I wouldn't be surprised if that... I'm personally expecting that before training camp now, given the process that they're going on here. So in my head, that's what I'm thinking. We'll see if they end up doing that. But obviously, I mean, the fact that reportedly per Adam Schefter and Therese Paylor, Yahoo Sports as well, both said that that investigation almost went for about 8 hours. Tells me that
the interview, for 8 hours.
Yeah, the interview.
The investigation lasted a little bit longer.
Yes, thank you. Not on Law and Order, it doesn't. It gets over in
wrap that
15
up.
Minutes.
Like 41 minutes.
Exactly.
Without commercials.
Thank you.
Yeah. Facts,
so anyway.
Facts matter.
All right. Going, weaving back into traffic here. Now that Todd stirred us off the road again, since that's Todd went pro in that in his life.
I did.
Stirring people off the road. So anyways, going back to the Tyreek Hill thing. Yeah, I think personally, I think they got what they needed from him, and I think they are going to go back to New York, make the decision that they need to, and then we'll see if he, we'll see when a press release comes out about that or something ends up coming out on Twitter about that.
Do you, more or less than 3 games, what would you think?
My expectation, I could see somewhere between 2 to 6. I mean, 6, I think, would be the extreme on this. I could see 2, I could see 4. I'm not going to be surprised of anything in that range. And that's my personal expectation. Now, since I wasn't in the interview and I don't know everything that was in the NFL's decision-making, I'm not 100% definite sure that that's what's going to happen, but I mean, from looking back at other cases and looking at what they've done in terms of suspensions, I'm assuming with what is out there publicly, I would assume 2 to 6 would be the reasonable amount.
It's interesting because I'm probably, I'm not going to speak for you here, but I know that I felt like
you will never speak for
that's
me.
That's right. I mean, there was a time when, especially when, you know, some of the details started to emerge and then the tape that ultimately is what led to Tyreek Hill being suspended by the Chiefs came out, there was a time that it felt like this was just going to be a constant slow drip. And I thought that Tyreek Hill's days with the Chiefs were going to be limited at that point. But it really, it's almost reverse course now. I would actually be, I would take the under on 3 games for the length of suspension he ultimately gets. I mean, obviously Roger Goodell can do whatever he wants, but at this point, you know, I mean, obviously the NFL is still going to suspend him, and I know people are like, but he wasn't charged. You know, say whatever you want. This was a stain on the NFL, and that alone, because it brought negative publicity to the Shield, is enough under the personal conduct code for him to be suspended. And I suspect that he will be, but I think it'll probably be 2 games, maybe less. But it, you know, like I said, I guess it depends on, you know, whether Roger enjoyed his breakfast that morning.
I think. Given the whole circumstance and how public some things popped out there.
Sure, yeah.
And especially during draft night when the tape came out.
It was not a good look, yeah.
It's just one of those things where, unfortunately, that you're going to be setting a precedent with this for what's going on, and people are going to be watching closely, whether it's agents, players, teams, and I think they're going to have to send a message to the rest of the league about that things like this are not going to be acceptable.
Yeah. And of course, there was more fallout from the whole thing because Kevin Keatsman at Radio Sports Radio 810 was talking about the Tyreek Hill situation, talking about the fact that Tyreek had met with investigators and then said, quite frankly, some heinous things about Andy Reid's family. Whether you believe that he was misinterpreted or was taken out of context or whatever, the things that he said were indefensible, quite frankly. And then he went out and went on a tour trying to defend him, you know, and so now he's gone. Are you going to be the afternoon drive guy on 810 now, Nick?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm not.
Because I was going to say, you know, it's always up in the air for me. I'm always teetering on the brink. So I just, you know, I just wanted to know if you could take me to the job or something.
Again, I said no.
Okay.
Not on the job part, just I'm not.
Ouch. I thought we were closer friends than that, but that's okay. I respect your decision.
On what? What are we talking
about? Oh, I thought you said you wouldn't hire me.
See, and I knew the way you set that up, you were going to try to go down that road, no. And you did.
Do you think this is the end of an era in sports talk in Kansas City? Because Kevin Keats had been on the air for 22 years. I don't think he had his... you know, there was a time that I think he had the best fastball in the sports radio game in Kansas City. I think that time was a long time ago. But is this the end of an era in your mind?
I think in regards towards everything, I think there was a time. Here's how I'm going to phrase it. There was a time on the Chiefs beat when you had myself, Adam Teicher, Therese Paylor, Herbie Teope. You had Matt Derrick. You had Blair Kirkhoff. You had a bunch of people that were, and BJ Kissel obviously has with the Chiefs organization, to where we would be at every single press conference, every single Chiefs event that happened. And as you've seen, and then obviously Bob Gretz too, who's phenomenal, and Dave Scrett as well from AP. So each time,
shout out Scrett.
During that time, to me, that was a unique era for it. So I'm saying each thing.
Well, but I'm not talking just Chiefs coverage. I'm talking there was a time when.
And I'm getting to that point. Right. So I'm gonna get to it. So
it just sounded like you were running off a name, a list of people.
Because I want to show respect to those people.
All right, that's fine. Let's go.
Anyways, what I was getting at is that I think in each sports medium, whether it's team or overall in coverage, I think there's just an era where things come together and it always constantly evolves because people move on to new opportunities or things happen. So I think that's just a part of the TV, radio, sports media business, is that just things constantly evolve and the faces typically change.
Well, I guess what I was getting at was there was a time back when he was, you know, having people stand up and walk out of Royals games where he was arguably the most important voice in Kansas City sports media there for a while. And so that's why I just didn't know if, you know, how you looked back on that and the significance of the time that he was there. Because like I said, I that time was a long time ago at this point. But, you know, there's probably some people in our audience who don't remember, you know, the late 90s in that era when he was a huge voice in the Kansas City sports scene, even more than he was, you know, certainly the last 10 or 15 years.
Like I said, things constantly evolve.
That they do. We're going to now evolve this podcast, Nick.
Sounds like a good idea.
All right. We're going to talk about AFC West opponents. And obviously the Chiefs have been the kings of the division here, whether it was under Alex Smith, whether it was under Patrick Mahomes. The team to beat in the AFC West is the Kansas City Chiefs. So the question is, we're going to go over what the other teams in the division have done to get better and, you know, and talk about what specifically we think they've done to counter the Chiefs here. So let's start with the Chargers, because fair to say the Chargers are the biggest threat to the Chiefs' throne, right?
Yeah, they're the most complete team overall. They're the ones that are going to they're the ones that could topple the Chiefs. I mean, they have a really good roster overall, and they have a coaching staff that's been together and knows what everybody expects of each other. So with Anthony Lynn, with Ken Whisenhunt, I think you have
Gus Bradley. Yeah, he's a hell of a coach.
When you have that combination of those three people, I think you have good stability there. The thing that I personally always think is going to set them back is Phillip Rivers. I mean, he's always going to be panicky when he gets pressured a certain way. He's going to give up on plays sometimes, and he's a turnover magnet if you put the right amount of pressure on him. So the only thing that they had last year to equalize the Chiefs was their run game, and they didn't have Melvin Gordon in that second game, and then Mike Williams is kind of their other big factor, and we'll see what Hunter Henry does at tight end if he doesn't get hurt again. And Melvin Gordon has struggled to stay healthy for a full 16 games. So with that aspect of it, the Chargers, I think they're always on the brink of being great, but I think Phillip Rivers is always going to hold them back. And then defensively, I think they did a good job bringing interior pressure on their defensive line. They needed to add that to be able to compete against Mahomes and some other people. But at the end of the day, I think the Chiefs making the moves they did on defense is going to be able to hold strong against that front.
Well, Rivers, I think he's going to his 14th year as starter, 16th in the league. But I will say this: last year he had his second highest completion percentage, tied for third most touchdowns he's thrown in a career. He's still pretty close to peak form, and they still got a lot of weapons around him. I know Tyrell Williams left for Oakland, but they didn't. I mean, they didn't do a lot of tinkering this year. I mean, the big free agent acquisition was Thomas Davis, the former, although I see probably his old NFL years too, Carolina Panthers linebacker. Most of the additions they made were in the draft. Do you think that they did enough to catch the Chiefs, or did the Chiefs come back enough to them that they can catch them?
I think the Chiefs did enough to be able to, in the offseason, where they should be able to hold them off, minus injuries.
I mean, you talked about the pass rush, and I think adding Jerry Tillery there at defensive tackle with the three tech, with Joey Bosa, if Bosa, another guy who, when he's on the field, he can be a dominant player, but he's not on the field nearly enough. And then Melvin Ingram. I know we both like Tillery a bit when we evaluated some of the draft prospects. I think he can bring some pass rush. That's a pretty ferocious pass rush if all those guys are healthy. And then when you think about what they did in the playoff game against the Baltimore Ravens, when they used that seven defensive back front and they really tried to clog the running lanes and make life difficult on Lamar Jackson and then drop into zone, clog the passing lanes as well. They've got one of the deepest secondaries, I think, in the NFL, and they added Nasir Adderley to it. Do you think we could see some? Do you think? I mean, we already saw them come up with a pretty intricate design to counteract Lamar Jackson. And when you think about Derwin James and you know all the guys they have in that secondary, do you think that they are scheming up some things specifically for Patrick Mahomes?
I think everybody in the NFL is scheming stuff up for Patrick Mahomes. So that's a matter. The Chargers are going to take away what the Chiefs were able to attack against them. And last year in their second game, it was a lot of screens and a lot of flats passes against that cover three, because that's kind of where the weakness is when teams drop into those coverages. So the Chiefs attacked that, and they were able to command that game for the most part until the defense started getting predictable for Rivers to shred them apart there in mid-third quarter into the fourth quarter there, and Mike Williams just had a day, himself a real good day that day. So, yeah, I mean,
I guess the NFL did come out and say that offensive pass interference should have been called, on that. What ended up being the game? Well, the game-tying touchdown, effectively.
No, they still would have replayed the down, and I'm sure they still would have scored, so I don't think it actually would have mattered.
I'm just disappointed in your lack of faith in Orlando Scandrick, given a second opportunity there.
I thought you'd be more disappointed that I didn't have faith in Butterscotch Bob.
No, I'm the. All right, man. I mean, I feel like since I kind of kind of gave him the nickname. My thoughts on him were pretty clear. But anyway, what have you looked at their schedule at all? I mean, do you think the Chargers are a playoff team still, even if they can't dethrone the Chiefs?
I think they have a possibility. Just for the Chargers, it always comes down to injuries. So it, I know they've had years where it seemed like half the team was on IR. I know they weren't, but I remember one year they had like 18 players on IR and they were either starters or expected to contribute, and that was just a couple years ago. So I think it just comes down to how healthy they can be and how much they can keep a pass rush, because if their pass rushers got injured, then if Mike Williams got hurt, I think those are kind of where the wheels would fall off for him.
Do you have your passport renewed so you can go down to Mexico City on November 18th for the first meeting?
No.
I'll drive you there.
That's a solid pass.
We can make it a road trip, Nick.
That is a big solid pass if that's the idea right there.
Oh, all right. Well, you heard it here, folks. Nick hates me. On that somber note, we'll be back on 4th and 1.
It's your time to shine. Join me every Sunday night for Sunday Sound Off, an interactive sports show where we put you in our starting lineup, answer questions, voice your opinion, sound off with our panel of experts.
Sunday Sound Off, sponsored by TDR Auto Plaza. The power of Mother Nature.
We now have a confirmed tornado.
Taking direct aim on Kansas City.
We were watching Gerard Jubaley, so we knew it was coming.
This is significant, Gary.
And when the sirens sound.
Very strong tornado.
That's headed toward us.
They're the one team you can really trust.
Need to get in your safe place immediately.
On air, Facebook, on our app. They're accurate when it matters most. Gary Lezak and the 41 Action Weather Team. Kansas City's most accurate. Kansas City's weather leader.
41 Action News, available on Amazon Echo.
We know Kansas City.
We love telling the stories of Kansas City.
Well, it's not exactly any one thing, and we couldn't do it without our reporters on the streets.
Behind these doors here at MCC.
Big flashes of lightning as well.
We hustle. We dig.
We bring you the important stories you won't see anywhere else.
So how many diapers are you giving out a month?
There is a difference in the morning. Watch us, and you'll see.
41 Action News, clear, complete coverage.
41 Action Sports with Mick Schaefer. Clear, complete coverage.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. Nick and I made up over the break. So good news, folks. Nick loves me again. I still don't know if the road trip's on.
It is not.
But I'm going to get snacks just in case, okay? I'm going to get snacks, and I'm going to get you like a big 64-ounce thermos mug so that, you know, if we need to like fill up a quick trip on the way, we're good to go, all right?
Fill up where again?
Quick Trip.
Oh, okay.
QT. I was kind of caught in no man's land. I didn't know whether to say QT or Quick Trip, and it came out funny. Don't you judge me.
I just asked where the establishment was.
They're all over the place. My wife can't drive past Quick Trip without stopping. I did it again, but she can't drive past one without stopping. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's move on to the rest of the AFC West. Let's start with the Denver Broncos. You know, they coming off back-to-back losing seasons for the first time since 1972. They got a new head coach, Vic Fangio. You know, he's been a defensive coordinator in the league for a long time. But, I mean, obviously, we don't know what he's going to be yet as a head coach. You know, he's not a proven commodity, certainly, in that respect. Wouldn't say that John Elway has a great track record of identifying guys to lead a franchise. And then they went out and got Joe Flacco to be their quarterback after the Case Keenum experiment. Didn't quite work out last year the way they'd hoped. They went 6-10. Did Denver do enough, or in your mind, did they do anything to close the gap with the Chiefs?
I mean, Denver overall, whenever you're getting a guy like Vic Fangio, I mean, the defense is going to be his and in his image and what he did with Chicago and the 49ers. So I think in that regard, I think they're going to be a disciplined team. I think they don't like to allow big plays, so I think they're going to do their best to take that away from the Chiefs and the Chargers. And I would not be surprised if they're not somewhat more ball control and if they try to do some more play action pass, because I know early on in his career, Flacco wasn't half bad at play action passes. And then Baltimore really wanted to get into more shotgun with him. But from that aspect, I think the defense in the secondary they got with Callahan and then with Harris and I'm drawing a blank on the
Kareem. Yeah, Kareem Jackson.
Kareem Jackson. That's from the Texans. Yeah, with those three combined, I'm curious to see what they are or what they can do. And he obviously knows Callahan from their time in Chicago together. So I think that'll be intriguing in that aspect. He's going to have good edge rushers with Chubb and Von Miller, and then Derek Wolfe as well. So I think they'll be somewhat disciplined. I mean, they still only have three starters that remain from their Super Bowl team. So those days of the Wade Phillips mentality and all that stuff, that's pretty much gone at this point. So I'll be curious to see what Fangio is able to bring in that regard. And their defense wasn't necessarily the problem last year. It was really their offensive line's been a problem even when Peyton was there, and they've never properly replaced it. But they got Mike Munchak from the Steelers, and I think that's going to be a guy that is going to – I think Munchak is really kind of the biggest acquisition that they made this year for long term to pair with Philip Lindsay. But Flacco, he hasn't been the same since his hip injury, and I don't think it's going to get much better. But they needed somebody in front of the young quarterback they were going to draft, and I figured that was going to be Drew Lock. We've talked about on the podcast many months before the draft happened, and I said I'd heard that Denver was a strong possibility. So I like that Drew Lock is going to be in an area where he can grow and develop. So overall, I think Denver's still a couple years away. I think Fangio is going to have to spend 2 to 3 years building his mentality into him. But, I mean, Munchak is going to be a big part of helping this team get to where they need to go.
Well, and you know, you mentioned how Joe Flacco at one time was one of the better play-action passers. He also had a pretty good reputation for throwing the deep ball. That's more reputation than it has been reality the last several years. And you mentioned, you know, the hip injury and some of the injury issues he's had. But he's really an average quarterback at best. And I don't think when you have Emmanuel Sanders and Cortland Sutton as your top receiving threats that he's going to make a big jump forward. The one guy I think that could become kind of a thorn in the Chiefs' side is Noah Font. I do think he's a good player. And they did address the offensive line a little bit. Dalton Reisner out of K-State's one of the guys they picked up. They also threw a ton of money at Juwan James, the old Miami Dolphins right tackle. And Mizzou guy, Connor McGovern, is going to be taking over at center. But all that said, I think it's still kind of a net loss because Matt Paradis was one of the best centers in the game. He's now in Carolina. And so a position that was a weak spot for him is going to continue to be a bit of a struggle. You know, especially as long as Garrett Bowles is the left tackle, I think they're going to struggle there. We'll see what Munchak can do, but you know, they've got lots of holes there. I did think that the interesting thing though was other than Juwan James, their two biggest free agent acquisitions were corners. Now, obviously, they had an issue with whether, you know, Harris was going to be coming back or not, you know, and he had asked for a trade. But what do you think it says that they really targeted cornerback as a place to address? I mean, when you look at that and you look at what Oakland did, and we'll talk about that a little bit here in a minute, but also, you know, you got the San Francisco, or you got two other top six NFL offenses in the division. I mean, you think that the Denver Broncos were very mindful of that and the way they approached the offseason?
I think every team in the AFC, especially in the AFC West, I think they're all going to be mindful of what Mahomes can do, and they're all going to try to figure out ways to make it more difficult for him. So I think he's wanting to build around those three guys now, if he can, in the secondary, and try to see if he can make some magic.
Here's the thing. Here's one of the bigger problems I think Vic Fangio is going to face right away is you're going to have a new team. You're going to be installing new systems, new quarterback, new report, everything like that. You get to play at Oakland to open the game or open the season, but before you get to your bye, you've got games against Chicago, Jacksonville, Tennessee, the Chiefs, and Cleveland, and then road games at Green Bay, the Chargers, and Indianapolis. That's a real tough schedule. Hard to see them winning more than three games early on and kind of limping into the bye. And I think they're going to have played themselves out of it by the time they hit the bye there in early November.
We shall see. I'll let you know after week three of preseason when I get a chance to watch them all.
Fair enough. I know your favorite team, other than the Chiefs, the Oakland Raiders, going to talk about them a little bit. Were you as big a fan of Oakland before or after the Antonio Brown trade?
I'm not worried about him either way.
I'm just kidding. I don't think you're not really an Oakland Raiders fan, are you? Okay. Moving on. I'm sorry, guys. He's a Las Vegas Raiders fan. That's my fault. Mike Mayock is the GM. I think people kind of, you know, when they reached at number three for Cleveland Farrell, I think people felt like, It was a laughable moment, and that, you know, here, this is what you get for hiring a former NFL.com writer to be your GM. But I really thought, aside from that, and I think it was a reach at number three, but I think Cleveland Farrell is a good player. I really thought that the Raiders did some smart things in the draft from there on. And I think the Raiders got better this year. But coming from 4-12, coming from as bad as they were, do they have any chance of really closing the gap with the Chiefs?
I think the Raiders will be improved from what they did last year. Their wide receiving group, obviously, with Tyrell Williams and then Antonio Brown, I think that'll be improved in some regard. And then, obviously, they got Hunter Renfro. So I'm curious to see what he can do in the system. And then, obviously, Josh Jacobs. I think Gruden wants to be able to run the ball more and be more physical, and he's slowly been tearing up that offensive line and rebuilding it in his image and getting rid of the expenses that he had in that offensive line before him. So I was not surprised one bit to see him make some additions and try to get some more athletic offensive linemen in that scheme and that system.
Through the biggest contract in the history of the NFL at Trent Brown, the former Patriots left tackle there. So
that one's probably going to bite him because he's notorious for not being able to stay in shape. So that one is going to be an interesting one, unless they put a whole bunch of clauses in his contract that he needs to be a certain weight. So that'll be interesting in that regard. But yeah, I loved it. They got Foster Moreau. I think he was a great pickup. And then Quentin Bell, the defensive end, is very athletic.
Moreau, though, can't really replace Jared Cook. I mean, Jared Cook was their best player last year. He's now with the Saints. I mean, so that's still a net downgrade for them, right?
It potentially could be. It's just going to be a matter of what the receivers can do to replace that ability in the offense and how they can space out the defense with some of their scheme. In some ways, Gruden's trying to figure out a way to recreate what Andy's built here in Kansas City, and I think these are some of his initial steps to be able to do that. And so I think that's what he's hoping is coming down the road. But for the most part, I think that there's still a lot they're going to have to do on defense overall to be able to stay as competitive as they want. I think right now their mentality is we're going to try to score as many points until we start building up this defense over time. And I think the Raiders will be improved. I could see them winning a handful more games, but I think Gruden understood when he took this job how long the rebuild was going to be and that he's going to need a new quarterback to do it. So I long term, I don't think Carr is going to be the quarterback for him, but I think he's the quarterback right now until John gets the apple of his eye long term.
I will say, so they also, in the offseason, the Antonio Brown news dominated, and then the Mayock, the Cleveland Farrell pick, all that. But they added LaMarcus Joyner at safety. They added Brandon Marshall, the former Broncos linebacker. They also added Vontaze Burfict. It'll be interesting to see how that works out with Antonio Brown in the locker room, if you know anything about the history when they were with the Saints and Steelers together. But they also had, after trading Khalil Mack and after trading Amari Cooper, they ended up with six of the top 129 picks in the draft last year. They picked Josh Jacobs, who you mentioned before. The other five picks were all on defense, and that tells me that they're terrified of Patrick Mahomes and Phillip Rivers and what the rest of their division can do.
I think they're wanting to build it. I think they're looking at the long term of how to build against Mahomes. So you bring in those guys now, you teach them what you want, you make them an athletic player, you pick up athletic players, you build the mentality with them now, and you bring in like a Joyner who's physical, you bring in like a Burfict who's physical, and you let those guys work with the players and kind of be the leadership for them under Paul Gunther's system. And I think we'll see that whenever Hard Knocks rolls around. I think you'll see a lot of that. If they really wanted to get crazy, to bring in James Harrison and take it to a whole new level, just for the presence alone. He didn't even have to play. Just let him show up.
Just make him like a coach.
And then having Richie Incognito on that offensive line now. They're trying to build the old Raider way, the Raider mentality. And Gruden knows he's got a lot of patience from ownership to make it happen. So I think he's looking at it long term, building it over long term to where he knows he's got 5 to 10 years to do it, while most coaches right now in year two or three are trying to throw everything at it that they can to keep their job.
Yeah, you only get realistically one year, and then you better start showing results. But I did think it was interesting because we always talk about what are the two best ways to control a passing game. It's space and it's time. It's either get corners who can shut you down, who can eat up space, who has some range, or get a pass rush so they can get after the quarterback and they can, you know, and they give the quarterback less time to make reads, guys less time to get open. In those first picks, they got three defensive backs and two defensive ends when they were addressing their defensive line needs there. So anyway, do you still think that the Chiefs win and win the division going away, or do you think it's going to be more of a dogfight than it has been?
I'm honestly not sure until I watch training camp and preseason to be able to have a good barometer on that.
Don't think the Chiefs are going 16-0?
I doubt it. If they do, that's great. But I mean, overall, I'm in my mind, it's the Chiefs and Chargers, with the Raiders improving and the Broncos having a ways to go in a lot of regard in their rebuild. But I don't think right now the Raiders and Broncos are where they want to be able to compete with the Chiefs and Chargers. But I think they're both organizations that with the right moves and the right luck, they can get there.
All right, we are going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, Nick's going to make me look like an idiot here on 4th & 1.
41 Action Sports with Mick Schaefer. Clear, complete coverage.
Cutting the cable cord? 41 Action News is now on Roku. Search KSHB. Add our channel and you're set. All of our newscasts stream live. No other station in Kansas City can say that. Get clear, complete coverage on 41 Action News now on Roku.
We don't just report the stories. We find the stories. Getting the answers you deserve every day, every night. 41 Action News at 10. Clear, complete coverage.
It's your time to shine. Join me every Sunday night for Sunday Sound Off, an interactive sports show where we put you in our starting lineup, answer questions, voice your opinion, sound off with our panel of experts.
Sunday Sound Off, sponsored by TDR Auto Plaza.
Welcome back to 4th & 1. Todd Palmer joined by Nick Jacobs. Nick, it's time to name that chief. Whose turn is it to go first?
It's always going to be your turn because right. I'm looking right. Mine up right now.
All right. Here we go then. Nick Jacobs, I challenge you. Can you name this chief? He played his entire 11-year NFL career with the Kansas City Chiefs and was a starting linebacker on the Super Bowl IV championship team. He was an 8-time Pro Bowler every year from 68 to 75 and a 3-time All-Pro. He was inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame in 1986 along with Paul Hornung, Fran Tarkenton, and Ken Houston, if you were curious. He's still alive. 73-year-old Virginia native who played at Morgan State. I don't know if that helps you. Started 146 of 149 career games and finished with 27 interceptions and 18 fumble recoveries. He played before they actually kept track of stat or of tackles. Technically, Nick, he's one of 10 Chiefs whose number has been retired, though Bill Moss also wore his number 63 jersey. His number was retired on October 24th, 1992, along with Jan Stenerud and Buck Buchanan. Nick Jacobs, can you name that Chief?
You said Morgan State.
Yep.
And that was the one that I thought it was a certain name, but it was not. With the number, I really want to say, because the things that are popping my head is Ed Buddy or E.J. Holb. I'm going to go Ed Buddy.
No, I think Buddy was a little bit before this guy. And it's not Holub either.
I don't remember.
He's kind of the forgotten guy. I mean, people seem to remember Bobby Bell, Buck Buchanan, Willie Lanier. Lanier.
Okay.
All right. You ready?
Sure.
Your turn.
All right. This former chief joined the organization in 1999. He played during the Vermeil era. He was in NFL Europe with the Barcelona Dragons, where he had a record 105 tackles in a single season. Now, during his time with the Chiefs in 2002, he had 162 tackles, 109 of them were solo. And that record there when he had the 162 in a season that broke Gary Spanny's record, who had 157 in 1979. Do you need any more?
Well, I was thinking Mike Maslowski.
You are right.
he was insane. For those of you who don't remember, my favorite thing about Mike Maslowski was the Ultimate Warrior face paint he would put under his eyes. At least that's what it reminded me of, was the Ultimate Warrior, which I know I've dated myself as being a little bit old, since that's my WWE reference.
Good job.
All right. Well, thanks, Nick. Hey, is there anything else you'd like to do here before we wrap up this edition of the 4th and 1 podcast?
We can check the tweets.
Do you have some questions like to check from the old Twitters?
Yeah. The first one will be from Jason. He asked, if you could add one player to this team, who would it be?
One player? Jerry Rice in his prime. Is that not?
I'm assuming he means current.
Okay. Man, I don't know. I mean, Aaron Donald, just because I think he's the best player in the game, and I'd certainly take him on my team.
All right. Next one will be from James. He asked, old school topic while we're in the dead period, position changes. I always thought Brendan Flowers should have transitioned to free safety like Mark Collins did or Rod Woodson in Pittsburgh. What say you? Any other players in KC history that you needed to change a position or who needed a position change at the end of the year? End of their career, probably.
I don't know. You know, it's funny. I haven't thought about it. I mean, unless you're going to make Dustin Colquitt a quarterback, which I would be all for. You know, because he would be the best. He's a little known fact. Dustin Colquitt, best punter on the roster, also best quarterback on the roster. He just doesn't get to shine. I've always wanted to see maybe an undersized linebacker, and I can't think anybody, but maybe move them to fullback or like a third down type back if you could afford it at some point. I can't think of anybody who would fit. I don't know, maybe a Mike Maslowski. I would have liked to see him at fullback at some point, maybe. I don't know if those guys can catch enough, though.
All right, Jeff, I love his Twitter handle, Real Scorekeeper, ask, will Chris Jones get a new deal done during camp or the / season? Will Tyreek get a new deal done during camp / season? Is it wise to offer both contract extensions this year?
I mean, it sure sounds like, assuming this NFL investigation breaks the way we think it is, it sure sounds like something's going to get done with Tyreek sooner rather than later. I mean, people that I know and respect and who would know better than me are reporting that. So I think that something gets done with Tyreek. Chris Jones, I still think the Chiefs, you know, like we talked about a week or two ago, they need to see him show up. And so a lot of this depends. I think the ball's in Chris Jones' court. If he shows up on time for training camp and shows that he's ready to get going with the team, then I think the likelihood goes up. The longer he's there, the more they see, the more he buys in, and the more he can show that he's productive. The flip side, of course, is, you know, the injury concern. But I think if Chris Jones shows up and Chris Jones shows out, then, yeah, sometime before the season's over, he's extended as well.
And our final question comes from Jeremy Paul.
Well, and he also asks, is that wise? And I think it just depends on the numbers. The one thing you got to remember is, in some ways, the salary cap, depending on how you structure those contracts and how you front load it or add signing bonus money to it, sometimes those numbers are a mirage. The other thing is, there's a new CBA coming in just a couple years. And so there's a good chance that the salary cap could be adjusted. So if Brett Veach and the Chiefs have some inside information, I'm sure they'll make some wise decisions about how they want to allocate that money.
And our final question comes from Jeremy Paul. Believe the Sammy Watkins is in the best shape of his life hype?
I honestly never believe that hype for anybody. I hear it in training camp with baseball teams. And this is one time. I'm absolutely with you, Nick. Let's see it when they get on the field in training camp and in preseason. And more importantly, let's see if he can maintain it and stay healthy for an extended period of time.
That's all for this edition of Check the Tweets.
And that's all for this edition of 4th and 1, Nick Jacobs. Is this your favorite episode we've ever done together?
Oh, yes. It's in the top 5. What are we going to talk about next week, Todd?
Holy hat. I don't know, but I'm sure it will be fantastic. Honestly, I forgot to check my email. I can't remember. I did all my research for this week, though.
We're going to be talking about next week on the 4th and 1 podcast that Todd demanded a list of the 6 topics we're going to be talking about over the
I don't remember what order we settled
over the
on.
Chiefs.
I
know. You literally sent me an email this order with the week that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I know, but I haven't started looking at. I don't know if you're aware, but like I'm trying to sell a house. I'm trying to buy a house. I got a lot of things I got a lot of things on the old plate right now. You're lucky I was able to do any research for this.
And I've got a doctor's appointment tomorrow, Todd.
That's true. That's true. But that's tomorrow.
That is tomorrow. Thanks, Todd. So what we're going to talk about next week, we're going to talk about the AFC teams that potentially stand.
Oh, yeah. Who else? Yeah. There'll be a lot of Patriots talk, I think.
It's certainly possible.
All right. No, I knew that. Thanks for the reminder, though, Nick.
Hey, no problem.
We hope you guys will tune in next week.
Your personal Rolodex.
Here on 4th and 1.